Bodhidharma's two entrances and four practices. There are many ways of entering the Tao, but all can be reduced to only two: the entrance of principle and the entrance of practice. Entrance by principle is awakening to the truth by means of the teaching with profound belief that all beings are the same true nature, which isn't apparent when it's shrouded by delusions and false self-impressions. If one turns from the delusions and reverts to reality, is firm in meditation of oneness of self and other, ordinary and sage, and firmly abides without wavering, not following after written teachings, this is mysteriously being in accord, being identified with true principle. It is non-discriminative, serene, and without effort. This is called entrance by principle. So this is what we spoke about yesterday. And in a way, if we sum it up, we could say non-self and nothing other than self, or non-self and non-dualism. The entrance by practices, as I said yesterday, is there are four practices, and we'll discuss the first two today, and then the third and the fourth on subsequent days. Essentially, there, how do we manifest this true nature that we are? How do we live in the midst of the, if I say it in general terms, the interdependent impermanence that we are? And to sum them up, we could say what is skillful and appropriate is the guideline we can reflect on. Skillful and appropriate. So the first two practices are, how do we deal with conditions and circumstances, whether it's first retribution or response to enmity, or requiting to injury, or the second, the acceptance of circumstances or adapting to conditions. Requiting injury, or the first practice. The text talks about becoming estranged from the principle, from the root, and following after various conditions, which, going here and there, results in ill will, hatred, antagonism, and harming others. So despite not having any transgressions any activity that we did, things occur. How do we, with satisfaction, bear and accept it and don't add on ill will or complaining, don't add on enmity and further injury and discord? See, that's one aspect of this dealing with conditions. In a way, it says, do not be saddened by the experience of suffering if one bears in mind, penetrates the fundamental nature of things, which is maintaining this state of mind of being in accord with this true nature that we are. This true nature that we and all beings, we and all circumstances share, despite it being covered or despite our tendency to believe the stories, or to use a big word, delusions and attachments of what it is. And in a way, the second practice is a continuation of this first one, but in terms of when we get what we want. The text states, the practice of following conditions is that sentient beings, we, lack self and are whirled about by conditions and circumstances, or conditions and karma events. Suffering and joy arise with conditions, from conditions. Even if we encounter wonderful honors and so forth, it is simply a response to conditions and circumstances. If we hold on to them, we fail to see that they exhaust themselves and cease, are impermanent, that gain and loss simply follows conditions, and that our fundamental nature, our, if we use the word fundamental mind, heart, neither increases nor decreases. This was, in a way, you could see this as the clear continuation of the fundamental principle that all living beings share this same true nature that we are, which means that not better if they do A, B, C, not worse if they do D, E, F. If we remain unmoved by, quote, winds of joy. Unmoved doesn't mean don't be joyful, but not being attached and caught up by it. Just as not being reactive to circumstances which are difficult, then we can be in accord with the way, which means being in accord with the nature of our life. See, the way this talking about either so-called difficult conditions or so-called good conditions is to enable us to be who we are and not be blinded by our reactive habits, or not be blinded in the midst of the impermanent conditions that appear and disappear. Because, not that there's anything wrong with the conditions, in fact, the conditions are nothing but this nature of our life that's manifested, but if we're blinded by how we see them, then it results in suffering for us and suffering for others. It results in harming others and harming ourselves. And it further perpetuates us missing our own life. See, it further perpetuates us not seeing who we are, and instead believing, if I say it that way, our story, our judgment of what's so. You know, this text of Bodhidharma is in a way very general and yet very simple. And of course it's written in a milieu, a context where there is certain general, what should I say, understanding of cause and effect and all sorts of other world views, but none of those are necessary for us to see, as I said, what's skillful and appropriate. If we're present and experience this that we are, this life, then seeing what's skillful and appropriate grows out of that experiencing of this life that we are, experiencing of this non-self and not other than self. That's why in a sense, even though this text talks about two entrances, really it's just different facets of talking about how do we be, enter, maintain and support ourselves in being who we are. And not only support ourselves, but support others. Because, as you might remember, the next two have to do with craving and desires and generosity and practicing with others in accord with the way, the reality. But we'll leave those next two for the next 2 days. So, in a way, this is easy to say. It's difficult to manifest. Easy to say, talk about how to take conditions. Difficult because how strong our habitual reactiveness to conditions are. How strong our belief about what conditions mean, whether it's conditions of so-called ourself, body, mind, or so-called others. See, both of those are the places where we get blinded, where it's difficult to see and acknowledge that we share this one true nature. We means how I am now. Doesn't matter if it's the way I was yesterday or the way I think I should be, but how it is right now. That's exactly what Zazen is. How do I be? Not how do I be, that's the wrong thing. Being as it is right now, this moment of experiencing. And when we notice our decision, reaction, belief that how it is right now is not okay, whether it's how it is physically, mentally, how it is with so-called myself or so-called others in my world, right there is the reminder to see what is skillful and appropriate right now. See, so that's going from the side of the fundamental principle to the fundamental practice. That's the question we can ask ourselves when we sit. What is skillful and appropriate right now? That's the question we could ask ourselves when we are interacting with others, when we're working, walking, or any other activity. So, in a way, this is very easy to say, in a way, a little more difficult to be clear on and to see what to do. And I know after yesterday's discussion of the entrance of principle, there was lots of, what should I say, desire to clarify it, both out here and individually. So I will stop now and see if we could explore a little further these specific practices and how they connect with this fundamental point, of that we all are this one true nature, mysteriously identifying with it, being serene, without effort to do anything extra, without need to add anything to it. I'll stop now and maybe we can explore this a bit further. If you want, you're welcome to change your position if you need to. If you don't need to, that's fine. But as you need to, do so. Yes?
The trouble or troubling nature of sort of inner storm is upon oneself. Sometimes it's, you said you would talk about storm today, that inner storm.
Well, that's isn't that what it is?
Yes.
Enmity or, I forgot what words they use, injury. Difficulties, conditions, how do we respond to it? How do we, first question is how do we see it? To see how we're seeing this as this is the, whatever it is you say about it. What is it you say when you call it a storm? Do we add on, there's something wrong that there's a storm right now? There's something wrong that it isn't sunny weather, it isn't quiet weather, it's stormy weather. Now, if I said, oh, because it's sunny, this is the way it's supposed to be outside, but if we have stormy, freezing cold this evening, there's a problem, there's a mistake in the universe.
I didn't want the thoughts to stop. I want it to stop. I want the storm to stop. I want to stop thinking like this. I don't want it to be like this. I don't want myself to be like this. I don't want to keep thinking like this.
Right. And
I know I'm causing my own suffering, but it's up, it's running, it's happening.
No. See, if we approach it that way, then we're leaving out or missing the essential question of asking what's skillful and appropriate now. Instead, we're saying, this shouldn't be, and I'm going to fight this, which is just perpetuating this self and other, this dualistic approach, even to our own states of emotion, thought. It doesn't work. It doesn't work because it perpetuates activity that creates more suffering for us. See, it's simple. Practical question is to ask what's skillful and appropriate right now. If you don't see it, if you don't see what to do, then ask that. Can you experience the storm and yet not be driven this way and that by the storm? It might be that the storm is so strong that what you need to do is, let's say if you're sitting, just focus on counting breath, because the storm is so strong. If it's in the midst of your daily activities, then you have to ask yourself what else would be. Because otherwise, what you do is you perpetuate this dualism, this idea that I'm something else, this is not me. Now, in one sense, that's true, and in another sense, it's not at all true. Non-self and not other than self. If I say it, but that's just a principle. Principles or a general phrase, that's of no use. It's of no use when you feel the storm, when you feel driven by the storm. So, in a way, how do we be in the midst of the storm and yet not be overwhelmed by the storm, and worse, not do what causes more suffering for ourselves and others by the storm? Because sometimes you blame the storm on other people. It's her fault. She said it, and that's why I'm so stormy, so I've got to get stormy with her. Then now my storm will be okay. Maybe you won't say that, but I've heard other people say that. Not in those words. But, so what? That's why I ask us to look at what's skillful and appropriate right now. Because just saying, oh, we share this one true nature, oh yes, it's of no use when you're in the middle of the storm. But looking at what's skillful to be able to experience the storm and yet not caught in the reactive resistance to it and reactive habits of what to do about it, that's valuable. In sitting, it's easy to stay with the experiencing. If you need to stay with the breathing or whatever else is appropriate. In a way, it's a koan. How to be in the midst of the storm and not be overwhelmed by it, to do what's not skillful, what causes more harm. Because storms occur. That's what conditions are. Just like wonderful, peaceful states occur. And we can get ourselves all caught up and say, ah, isn't it great? Look at what I've accomplished. Ah, this is going to stay this way all the time. I'll be peaceful, serene, deep, etc., etc. Which is fine to enjoy it. But again, if we add on that kind of attachment to it, then we're going to be troubled by the storms as well. That, in a sense, creates storms. Not immediately, but it creates our belief that makes storms difficult to tolerate when they occur. See, that's the point where the text says, whirled about by conditions, humans, beings, the text says sentient beings. Oh, no, let me say that. I need to correct that. The translation of the text says sentient beings. Whirled around by conditions. See? Because we lose track of what fundamentally we are. Success and failure depend on circumstances. To use the way the text, another translation. Is that...
I was just thinking about the idea of how a storm, the opportunity of a storm is this, you know, there's a lot of energy in a storm, and just how the opportunity of greeting that, like, if I think of it as losing track of something, then the opportunity to greet and come to know in some sense that I don't yet know. You know, like, if I assume that I know something about this storm and then I know that I'm losing track, like, I think I found it really helpful to notice those thoughts, like, oh, something, you know, oh, storm, that's bad, you know? And just really noticing the thoughts that come up when I think that there's something that shouldn't be happening, and just, and then trying, you know, I do like words like friendliness, because the idea of greeting and opening with some friendliness to the experience, the bodily sensations of storm, you know, being mm-hmm. that storm. And so I think, like, I don't know, whatever the idea of losing track implies, there's a track we should be on. And then
losing track?
That, well, you had, just an expression that you had just said, losing track of our true self. And I think the idea that we're encountering, you know, the energy of a moment, whatever's happening. And so just greeting that and opening to whatever's happening. I don't know, and that's, I found that really helpful.
If you can tolerate and experience the storm, sure. The practice is essentially being experiencing. The difficulty is when we don't want to be experiencing. See, that's losing track. Believing our thought that there's something wrong with the storm. That's where he was
right,
coming.
Right. Yeah, and just the idea of friendliness for me has been an opportunity to, you know, in a sense, acknowledge that sense that there's something wrong, that's a thought. And, you know, and friendliness is just really, you know, like that poem, The Guest, where we just invite whoever shows up at the door. And I understand what you're saying, that resistance can feel really real, you know, and just you know, and even just encouraging the friendliness to that resistance, like, I can be awake to this sense that this is just wrong, this shouldn't be like this, you know, just But I get that what you're saying, I think you're emphasizing how difficult that can be and how strongly we hold to the belief that, you know, in fact, one practice I did with Joko was labeling the thought, having a strongly believed thought that this shouldn't be happening, for example. Like, having a strongly believed thought has helped me just kind of stay with, you know, an experience that does, like you say, it's easy to talk about, but when it's happening, it doesn't feel that way.
And the, in a way, being completely identified, the entrance by principle is that, in a way, one is beyond where one reacts, but the reality is that we react when we do, and when you notice it, that's exactly what we have to take care of. That's exactly what we have to see, what's skillful and appropriate, whether it's labeling it, then always that's the entrance way into experiencing. Labeling isn't to create some new idea, but simply to jump off any ideas into this present moment, any attitudes into this present moment. See, that's always where our life is. In fact, that's always where we are. We're nowhere else, except when we take the present moment as something that we think about it, something that we believe about it, that this is terrible, this shouldn't happen, whether it has to do with conditions about ourselves or conditions about others. Some of us have a hard time with the changing body-mind states that we encounter, whether through aging, illness, or reaction to circumstances. We don't like to be getting older or weaker or have this or that not functioning in the way that it used to. And yet, this is exactly the nature of conditions and circumstances. And yet, this isn't who we are. It's conditions and circumstances that occur. And then, what is skillful and appropriate so that we can be joyous? Joyousness is not something we add, but be the joyousness we are in the midst of the storm, the ache, the difficult situation. Then we can see what's skillful and appropriate to manifest that for our so-called self or so-called others. There was someone here who wanted. No.
Just say that, you know, when you use the word storm, storms now are usually predicted, or and it seems like, well, where you can be prepared for some of these storms, and it's sort of when it's a shock out of the blue, that very unexpected, that practice is, you know, maybe, I mean, because it, the shock sort of jolts your whole being, you know.
And the predicted is just an idea we've got, we've gotten used to, and we almost start believing that our predictions of storms should go the way we predict, and they don't. And certainly they don't in this body-mind condition of our life, and not the body-mind condition of the life of all the people who are our life. Despite the fact that we expect something to be, it doesn't work that way. And then, or we think it should work that way, and we're not happy when it doesn't work that way. You know, we could all say, yeah, everyone in this room is going to die. I don't know. Yeah, I've given a prediction. I guarantee you, guaranteed that my prediction will come true. But that doesn't make us any happier about it. Any more easily able to embrace it some of the time. No one wants to hear that. Or even if you say, yeah, I'll die, but I don't want to be sick now or weaker now or lose certain functioning and have aches now until I die. I just want to, you know, at that future time when that's going to be. And not only we, but everyone we know. Everyone we know. I hear people complaining about the winter all the time, even though in the middle of the summer, everyone could have told them, or I could have told them, we're going to have a winter, it's going to be freezing, it's going to be cold weather, we'll have snow, and there'll be icy times. Okay. So, in a way. And, of course, people who report the weather are never appreciated for the correct predictions. They're always criticized for not predicting exactly the way we expect. See? And that's this human habit we have, that even when we sit, we could notice how we get caught up in predictions of how it's supposed to be and how, and sometimes even miss how it is. See, we miss our encounters with others when we believe our predictions of them. How many times do we not hear the person that we're speaking to because we're blinded by our prediction of who they are and what they're saying and what they're doing? Or how many times do we react when they are doing something different than the prediction? See, then we miss our life. If we know what the food in our bowl is based on our prediction, we miss the taste on our tongue and the texture in our mouth. We miss the chewing. We miss our life. See, that's being swayed by, quote, written teachings, oral teachings, things we've told ourselves. See, that's the point of the first entrance, is talking about this being mysteriously identified, mysteriously unified with the nature of reality that we are. See, being able to be serene and without effort to be who we are. Because there is no effort needed to be who we are. The effort, if I say it, comes when we're caught up in doing something that keeps us blinded to who we are. Then we need to see what's the skillful and appropriate practice. And the practice grows out of who and what we are. The text uses something that we translate into English as true nature, but in a way that just can give us more pictures that can be useful but can also create problems, just like using words like God or Buddha or whatever word can be useful but can also blind us, because then we create all sorts of pictures and ideas about it, and then even get upset when the conditions that God manifests aren't the way we want them to, and we think A, B, C because of that. But let me stop and because the point is here to see how can we talk about this in terms of practice, which is being, manifesting who we are. See, when we're doing Zazen, we're manifesting this non-self and non-other than self. We're manifesting this non-dual nature that we are. That's all Zazen is. Nothing else. Except when we're doing skillful actions such as noticing thoughts, which is still the same, but it's a specific response or specific medicine for a specific illness.
So can you say, Jeff brought up a real thing for himself.
Yes.
And how, and we all have storms. So say more about dealing with storms.
Tell me more specifically of a storm that needs to be dealt with. For instance, people are adjusting their posture because there's a slight tremor of stormy aches and pains of having sitting cross-legged, so stretch out a leg. That's a simple storm that we adjust to. Simple. And there are stronger storms when we find ourselves angry and enraged over how someone else is acting, or how someone else is not acting. Now, sometimes these storms can occur even as we're sitting, when the person is nowhere except in our whirling thoughts about them and emotions about what's happening. That's one kind of practice effort is called for. A different practice effort is called for when they're on the phone with you or face to face with you. What's skillful and appropriate grows out of your, if I say it this way, your skill, the maturity that you've developed, which we all develop, and your ability to stay present and not be blinded by your beliefs about them, but rather experience and at the same time see what's called for. Could be what's called for is to say, excuse me, I'm leaving, I'll see you another time, because you see that if you stay there, they might get violent. Or it might be to stay silent, or it might be to speak, or it might be, and I won't go further, because it depends on our ability and willingness to let go of our thoughts and emotion about them and to be there with them and yet not be caught up in our predictions, to use that word, about how they should be, but rather to experience how they are right now. And how they are isn't they out there, but it's they, me together. See, that's this not other than self. So to be willing to be there with them, to be willing to be, just as in Zazen, we be this bigger container where stormy thoughts can arise and pass, in the same way we be with other people. As a bigger container where a stormy person can arise and pass. Same time, doesn't mean that they're going to change. Doesn't mean that we have to stay there. That's the important distinction, whether you're doing it when you're there with them or when you're sitting. But this is all in general, and its generalities are just that. And it's always the specific of our being present that gives us the ability to see and to do and to, in a way, take the risk of going beyond what we want. Beyond what we want is called reactive habits. What we want is holding on to our beliefs and thoughts or self-centered attachments, if I say it that way. Nothing wrong with them. But if they bump up against reality, then right there is our practice. And we can tell it by the friction, if I use that kind of word, of it bumping up against reality. The friction of our being upset about the way it is as opposed to the way we want it. See, the only problem with the wants and desires, in a way that's the next practice, dealing with craving, but I'll say it now. The only problem is that reality is the way it is, not the way we want. The reality is this impermanence, interdependence that is our life. Okay. If you want to say more, please do. Though it might seem like practice is different on the cushion and off the cushion, it's really not. It's different modes, but once we settle in and are clear in our practice, then we can see how on the cushion it's one mode, off the cushion it's another mode, but it's just various modes of being in accord with who we are. If I use that kind of phrase, it might not look the same, it might not take the same skills, but it's fundamentally this life practice. Yeah.
I read a quote which was pretty interesting by a fellow who was involved in Zen, although he's a neuropsychologist. He said, referring to the storm, in this case the storm of emotion thoughts, he was saying, "You are not caught in the storm, you are not observing the storm, you are the storm." What do you, any
yes.
thoughts about that?
No.
Okay, that's a good question.
But being the storm, it's not the storm of emotion thought that we are exclusively, it's the storm of emotion thought universe that arises and passes. We tend to focus and privilege emotion thoughts, and sometimes we get into trouble because we do that. We miss the rest of who we are, and we privilege and focus on that, and in a sense that perpetuates this self-centeredness.
Can you give an example of privilege of the emotion thought?
Well, it's we think who we are is our thoughts and emotions, and we miss the rest of who we are, whether it's the physical functioning of being bodily present, whether it's the universe that is who we are. All of it is who we are. We're not some, you know, emotion, thought, amorphous thing, and everything else is run by that. But we privilege those because we say, oh, if I feel so and so, that's the way it is for me. If that's what I mean by privilege. And we focus on it sometimes to the extent that we miss what's our life is at the moment. We miss our breathing, our bodily senses, hearing, smelling, tasting. Very simple. That's what I mean by privilege. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's just, if I create a awkward construction, it's a little piece of this body-mind world that we are, each of us. See? And it's not something fancy. It's very obvious. If you get a bang on your knee, you know right away that you're not the emotion thought. I mean, in a sense it's connected, but in a sense you feel your knee. If there's a bang in the room, you hear it, because that's you at the moment. Or if you're so caught up in your thoughts, and sometimes we even call that some sort of illness or other, you even miss the sounds and the in the room and the feelings in your body, or you have delusions about them. That's what I mean by privilege. Nothing wrong with emotions, thoughts. It's just another aspect of being who we are. But when we call it self-centeredly focus on them, then we end up creating suffering for ourselves and others. And you don't have to believe me. Just look. When you're suffering, look if that's what's happening. And if it is, then maybe there's something to that. And most of us know when we're suffering. A little bit. Yes? So, that's... So, you don't have to believe what I said. Just test it by looking if, when you're suffering, you're caught up in your focusing on emotion thoughts. And if I say it in another way, the whole of our practice is to enable us to live who we are joyously and without suffering, or without being caught up and overwhelmed by suffering. That doesn't mean we're not going to have pain, but the whole of practice is only about enabling us, in the midst of this impermanence, interdependence that we are, to not suffer, but to manifest this wisdom and compassion that is being who we are.
Yeah, I've also been really encouraged by acknowledging that when I'm, compassion really does come from this experience again and again of, you know, of recognizing that human beings are struggling in this way, that we're together in this struggle. And so as I struggle with, you know, the various storms and the resistance to the storms, in the sense of, you know, at times anguish and despair of the storms. I mean, that has felt for me to be the ground of compassion, like where my sense of, you know, that when I look at other people, I see myself and I see that, you know, that like me, this person is, it, you know, this is part of our journey together. And like that has really been a source of a lot of encouragement for me, that, you know, it's not just a bummer that we struggle in this self-centered way. I mean, I don't like the word self-centered, because it's like, in a way, already labeling it sort of a drag, you know, and I find it encouraging just to recognize that every time I encounter this and experience this in myself, I'm softened a bit. And so when I look out into the world and I see, you know, someone else struggling, I soften to them as well. And that really has, if there's anything I feel that has been just so solidly apparent to me from this practice, it's that I feel more like appreciation of this human difficulty. And I appreciate that we keep showing up, you know, and I appreciate that we have some really difficult days. And like all of it is sort of just poignant and very human, you know, and that's part of the joy for me, honestly.
Then that is a skillful and appropriate practice support for you. And see, and that's what we all need to be able to find. What are the skillful and appropriate practice supports for us in various circumstances? And the more we can see which we can make use of to enable us to be who we are, that's what we need to use. See, and that is what comes from ongoing practice, if I say it in such a way, or from ongoing manifesting this true nature that we are. It's not something we're going to get from anywhere else, because it's who we are from the beginning. That's why it's called entrance by principle for that. Or to use a phrase that the texts use, awaken to what we are. Awaken isn't better. Ignorance and wisdom aren't different, and yet we need to awaken to it for ourselves. Thank you.
Copyright 2013, Eliu Genmyo Smith.